Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Life is Short ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
We're very lucky to live in a bucolic, green part of the country.
Bucolic, are you laughing about that?
And recently I was doing some weeding. I guess I riled up a hornet. I was listening to music, so I didn't hear it. But I just felt this like really sharp pain in my face. I took my headphones off and then I heard the like, and it occurred to me I was being attacked by at least one hornet.
Attacked? You can't be attacked by one hornet. We had a very different experience that day. I was inside and all I heard was, and it's just the sound, this like operatic sound just kept getting closer and closer until it was inside the house. And you're like, I'm sorry you went through that. That must have sucked.
I ran faster than.
But thank you for.
I also, did you see me fly into the house? Because that would have been funny too.
It.
Oh, that must have been funny. How many steps would you say lead up to that? 10?
Mm-hmm.
I think I did them all in two bounds.
Adrenaline. Hey, country living.
It comes with the territory.
Life could be a dream.
You're listening to Life is Short. I'm your country living host, Justin Long.
Life could be a dream, sweetheart.
With me, as always, is my equally afraid of bees, if not more so. So being judgmental, but also afraid yourself. I've seen you. In fact, I've heard you operatically scared. That's a funny way to be scared. Remember that time? I mean, I think we've talked about this on the show when Keir jumped out from behind there. We have talked about this. But the way you express fear is operatic. You were like, nah. It was like from Looney Tunes when
Figaro, Figaro, Figaro.
Yeah, your bee reaction was remarkably like what my bee reaction would have been in the same circumstance. I sing my fear away. I don't know why
I don't know.
It's like your most honest self. It's just that's what comes out.
Yeah. That's so funny.
Maggie was making fun of me. I think it was last summer. It wasn't this summer. God, it's a bad memory. It was last summer. We were in a car. We were about to go into a grocery store, and there was one of those, a bumblebee just landed on my pants in the car, like right before we left the car. And I was like, and I like panicked, and I like waved my hands around so furiously. And she, when I was gone, I got it out of the car window. I looked over at her, and she was like, had completely lost all respect for me.
You've had some scares with wildlife. I was also thinking about how fast I ran, and like when the stakes are that high. I mean, they shouldn't be that high for a bee, but you encountered a bear a couple summers ago.
When I was kayaking by myself in a lake, I think I've told this story, but I saw a bear just kind of swimming by me. It couldn't have been more than 25 feet away from me.
And it was just like dum-de-dum-de-dum.
Oh, very casual. And we saw each other at the same time, my memory is that we saw each other at the same time. And naturally, I panicked, and I turned around in my boat as fast as I possibly could and kayaked away as fast as I possibly could. But the bear was equally scared of me, stupidly.
It had only known.
Oh my God. It was threatened by me, so he started to swim away.
You would have been such an easy meal.
But I swam, I kayaked so fast. I'll never forget, it's like superhuman.
Yeah.
Another superhuman, I've had a lot of frights in my life. When I was a kid, I was trick-or-treating and a car full of hoodlums.
Oh.
Like neighborhood boys.
This is really funny.
Pulled over and stole my candy and knocked me to the ground.
Oh, that's not funny. I thought you were going to tell you about something else.
And I ran home as fast as I could. I was a little kid. And I remember going from point A to point B in like, ordinarily would have taken like 5 minutes. I got there in like 10 seconds.
Yeah.
It was amazing.
Yeah.
It's amazing how fast you can go when you're scared.
Oh, like, isn't it funny now to think about those hoodlums? How they must have been, how old, like 14, 13, 14, 15?
They could drive, so they were 16.
Yeah. But still, like.
But hoodlums in our town were like.
I know, like prepping.
Like skiers.
Yeah. That's the irony. Kids that already had money and like things, they were just like pricks.
That was shitty. Anyway, why are we talking about superhuman speed?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, our guest today is on a show about a man who has superhuman speed called The Flash. Our guest today is
Tom
Kavanaugh. I'm smiling really big because I'm thinking about how much I love Tom. Tom is one of the, he was one of the first people I ever worked with. He remains one of my very favorite people. I know I say that a lot on the show, and I probably get a
little really applies, though.
Yeah, Tom is truly the best. I wish I hadn't been using that expression for so many other people now, because it'd be nice to have reserved that. He was a mentor to me when I was starting out as an actor. He, not only in terms of acting, but how to be, just how to be a good person. And, you know, especially on a set, a film set, he's one of the nicest, most generous human beings I've ever met. And I love him. And this was a great opportunity to catch up with my old pal.
You were on a show with him called Ed.
Oh, I should have mentioned that.
You should have mentioned that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he played the role of Ed.
Yeah, it wasn't like a Big Brother program.
No.
I have a Big Brother who I also love. I wonder if how many of people listening now saw that. Like, what percentage? I would guess maybe less than 15, less than 10 maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you think?
I don't know.
I mean, it was a pretty obscure show even for then, though there were so few shows then.
You know, youngsters won't know it.
For sure.
Because it's not streaming.
Yeah.
You can't find it anywhere.
It's not in any stream that you can find looking.
Right. So if you weren't like a TV watching audience member between the years of 2000 and 2003, chances are you've never even heard of this show.
That's true. Well, it was about a lawyer who moves from the big city to his small town that he grew up in order to pursue his dream girl from high school, the one that got away. And he opens up a law firm in a bowling alley. So hopefully one day it'll be in some stream.
It was a great show, and he was great in it. And he and former guest Julie Bowen were the two stars of the show. And Justin played a young high school nerdy boy.
Along with another former guest of the show, Jennifer Goodwin.
That's right. So this is the third cast member of Ed, and hopefully there will be a couple more.
I hope so, because I just love reminiscing about those times. It may not be the most relatable thing, because like we said, many of you haven't seen it, but Tom is just, regardless, I think you'll really all be charmed by him. He is just effortlessly charming and great. So here it is, my catch-up with my old friend and mentor, Tom Kavanaugh.
Life could be a dream, sweetheart.
Do, 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 shaboom.
For all the shorties that want voluminous, fanned out lashes, this ad is for you. The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara creates corner-to-corner panoramic lash volume. Their tapered brush catches every single lash, even those pesky corner lashes. You know who you are, corner lashes. With the Panorama Mascara, you'll easily achieve that effortless, false lashes look. It's one of Christian's favorite looks. Plus, it lasts up to 24 hours and is clump and flake resistant. And just when you thought it couldn't get better, it does. The Panorama Mascara is a lot more affordable than other luxe mascaras. And honestly, it probably does a better job. It's affordable, but it's deceptive because it comes in a premium gold luxe packaging. So if you want a mascara that can do it all, volumize, lengthen, and stay put all day, you can buy the Panorama Mascara on Amazon today. As a podcast listener, I'm sure you know that audio piques the imagination, like especially this show. So if you really want to feel like you're in the story, check out Audible's collection of brand new exclusive thrillers.
Their titles feature captivating sound design, eerie soundscapes, and dynamic performances. So you'll be kept on the edge of your seat.
Here's an interesting psychological thriller that is out right now. It's an Audible original. It's called Oracle. It follows an FBI psychic who can help solve missing person cases when he touches those close to the victims. But of course, it comes at a cost. He'll see the horrific moments before the victims disappeared.
Shorties, I just got chills. You have to listen along with me. You don't have to.
No.
But I think you should.
Yeah, it'd be fun. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/long or text long to 500-500. That's audible.com/long or text long to 500-500.
Hello, hello again. Shaboom, and up we'll meet again.
I am so sorry. I can't even begin to explain the technical difficulties, but it's so embarrassing because I was so ready to be like on time, and because I know when I was a young buck and we worked together, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, I was often late. Is that true?
Yeah, that's right.
I thought, oh, I'm going to show Tom how much I've evolved, and I'm going to be an adult. I'm going to be on time. I've been panicking the last 20 minutes. I'm so sorry.
You know what's
sorry.
So great is you always had this thing, which you clearly still do, is like, you could be late, you show up, and everyone's like, Justin's here. People are happy to see you. It's really annoying. Don't get me wrong, but it's awesome that you carry that with you. It's like, dude, when he shows up, people aren't mad at him. They're happy to see him. That's a great, great thing.
My first major job was with you and people who seemed so grateful to be have a job like that, to be on Ed. You were the lead of the show. And I'm sure we've both witnessed since then, you probably before then, people who didn't behave that way. And do you remember how your first formative experience with somebody who behaved that way was, and that you thought, oh, I want it. That's how I should be.
I remember a specific incident, and not to name names, but you know, I did like a decade of theater. I didn't have to go through what you went through, which is great in one way, and I think it's a challenge in other ways, in that you became very famous very young. And by the time I, you know, had any kind of profile when we were doing our show together, I was less corruptible. You know, the gratitude that you sense was like, I couldn't believe it. I'm like, I'm living in New York. I'm working with you and Josh and Julie Bowen and just all the, you know, I'm working with Rob Burnett, who runs the Letterman show. Like, I just couldn't, when you, like, Insane Asylum Theater did not seem very far off in the past. And suddenly,
yeah, well, how far off had it been, Tom? Sorry, give me an idea of the timeline of that.
I would say, well, I think Ed, we first started kicking the can at that at 98, I think. That was the first.
Yeah.
That's a long, long time ago. But you might recall, we didn't do it right away. Just like everything else, you're like, oh, of course this thing won't go. Or, you know, we had to struggle to finally get to set and actually have a show. Like, most television shows never go through that process where we shot a pilot and then they didn't pick up the pilot, but they didn't outright cancel us. And then we waited a year and then shot a pilot for a different network. I don't know that.
That's very rare, I think. Leading up to that, though, how prior to your involvement with Ed, how many of those pilots had you done? How many did you have?
Well,
much
experience? 10 years before that, I'd been doing Broadway. And I kind of thought, walking down from my little place on 72nd, walking down to, you know, the Virginia Theater on 52nd, just like, this is the greatest thing in the history of great things, you know, like to live and act in New York. It was just, it was incredible. And then I tried pilot season between theater season. I was in Los Angeles. I got a pilot. It didn't go. And that was heartbreaking. And another pilot, it didn't go, and heartbreaking. It's that thing where, like, I think people say, like, I remember when we were doing press for Ed, it was like, new guy. And you were like, new guy, like 12 years in the, you know what I mean? But it's just like, great. You can say anything you want. I'm just so happy to be here. I'm so grateful to be here, you know? And the good thing about that is, if there's been like 12 years of working, and also a lot of it is working in Canada, where we tend not to like shine spotlights on are people who are working regularly. Canada doesn't, or at the time, didn't quite have the same mill churning behind people who were acting up there, like myself and my friends. And so in New York, you feel like you're on top of the world when you're doing Broadway, but I think people across North America don't say, hey, Ben Platt is killing it. You know, it's a big part of the theater community. It doesn't translate as much as film, the way film and television do. So
Tom, was there the desire among those Canadian actors to go to America and then kind of make it in America as opposed to Canada, or were people for the most part happy with that separation?
I can't speak for that community. I think you'll find variations of all sorts. You'll find people who, you know, one of my best friends has been, Kevin Jubenville is his name. You can IMDb, Google him. He's like done everything with the biggest names for as long as I've been doing it. Hollywood isn't his thing. I think the lure and the pull of like Hollywood is hard to resist.
Tom, what was the lure for you? I mean, what was that ambition, do you think?
I would say, I would ask you, like, how do you know you're an actor? I mean, I know your family history, but how does somebody know that? It's the same question for you. Like, how do you go
well,
to...
Yeah, it's a good... I think I would say at the time I identified so clearly with being an actor, I didn't think there could be a separation between one's identity and one's career. And I loved acting. I felt excited and liberated and the most heightened sense of joy when I was acting. So I knew it was something that I loved. I think it was just in the doing it that I knew that.
Yeah. For me, I think it felt more like being pulled. Something that you sort of avoided for a little bit, but knew you had to do. There were other forces saying, okay, you got to go to New York. You got to go to Hollywood. Like, I really honestly felt like being drawn and going and packing the car up and just going down, you know?
You know, Julie, I think, had a similar path into it. And I think that the thing that you guys have in common is that, I hope this doesn't sound insulting to other actors, I can imagine you're both so capable of doing so many other things. You know, like, you're both very bright. You were exposed to a lot as kids. It's definitely not a life that I'm sure your parents were, and I don't want to put words in their mouth, were they eager for you to pursue that?
Well, you're touched by the greatest fortune professionally if you sort of know what you are. There's a Lanford Wilson play called Angels Fall. One of the characters realized tennis was for him. And he said, I hit that first ace and that was it. That was it. I said, this is me. And once you know who you are, the rest is just work. That's the line. And I think that's very important to be an actor, because you have to, I think some people maybe do it and maybe even do well at it, but it might not be exactly who they're meant to be. And that brings struggle and difficulty with them. Whereas if there's no option and it just is who you are, it makes all the rejection, all the difficult things that much easier. Cause it's like, well, I'm just going to forge forth because I'm not going to go do the other things. The answer to your question is, you know, my father was, has always been go with your heart. And my mother is the eldest of an Italian family that, you know, her grandfather came over from Italy and, you know, they worked in a Quaker Oats factory, supporting all a massive household of children. And she was much more practical. And she was like, you know, use your degrees, you know, pay off your student loan and then be an actor, you know? And I had to say to her at some point, like, well, I think around the time we were doing Ed, I was like, Mom, I'm never going to do that. You know?
And, also, things are working out. Things are okay right now.
Your mother should be looking out for you.
You've been directing Flash as well, Tom?
Mm-hmm.
When you were talking about wanting to be an actor and the joy of knowing that, the confidence in knowing that that's what you wanted to do, was directing something that you had always imagined yourself doing?
No. Oh, no. Gosh, no. I mean, I think, you know, the up-and-coming generation is familiar with, like, because of the social media and, you know, like the technology that's available, it's not foreign to them to put together a video project. When I started, it felt like, well, you had to go to USC film school.
Yeah.
You're a director. Yeah. Well, you know, you can't just direct. And then we were doing this movie with this guy who had been a producer of Robert Redford's, and his name's Rick Stevenson. By the way, came on, we became friends. He came on and directed an episode of Ed. But we'd done this movie, and he was young and hip and, you know, had the Hollywood bona fides. And it was just like, oh, this guy, we're a bunch of young actors working with him, shooting in the woods. And it was just, he was just great. He rarely directed us, these young actors. And at one point, you know, I asked him about it. And it was like the thing with you, I said it with a third, but he's like, the best thing I can do as a director is cast well and then get out of the way. And he was modest, but the more I do it, the more I see, like, there's a massive amount of truth in that. And so, because not knowing anything about directing, there was this, we'd written this movie and wanted him to direct. And he was like, you direct it. Well, what are you talking about? He's like, I don't direct. He's like, well, you know what the camera's doing. You know what the story is. He's like, when you wrote it, did you see what the scene looked like in your head? Yes. Put the camera there. Honestly, without him, I don't know. Like, it's directing brings me so much joy. Like I say, sitting, watching talented people do their thing. It's just like, you kind of can't believe it. You just feel like it really is an incredible gift. And I feel like a lot of that gift I owe to Rick with that advice.
Your job is to facilitate good actors being good. And my brother and I just directed our first thing, and watching Melanie Lynskey and Judy Greer just go at it and get into these scenes. It was such, I'm getting goosebumps thinking about it. It was like it's a thrill.
I'll tell you a Judy Greer story. There was a thing. So we were doing a thing together, and we were playing sort of paramours that hadn't really gotten to that further point of their relationship. It's still will they, won't they.
So you were stuck on third base.
Yeah. But I had this camera, a friend of ours had had a baby, and you know, it was all about that tumult. And then we managed to catch eyes. Julie Bowen did this too on this one episode I directed, where it was just like, I sort of pictured it like people catching eyes across a room sort of thing. And with, I had this slow push of the camera, right? And we're supposed to look at each other's eyes, and it's like, maybe this is us one day, a child, you know, that sort of
thing. Was that the prom episode, Tom?
Oh my God, you're so good. With Julie Bowen, it was the prom episode, yes.
Well, I love that episode, and I know exactly that moment you're talking about. That shit is so hard to capture. It's so hard to capture silently too.
Yeah. And Julie is like, it's like you. It's like you tell somebody something, and then they're like, I know what you want, and I'm going to exceed that. I'm going to make it better. Julie, we got Amy Mann's You're an Amateur, which is like a needle drop, which is incredible. And Julie's kind of like, you know, Julie sort of intakes breath when she was, you know, when she was doing these scenes where she needed to command the thing. It felt like when Julie would breathe in, she would bring the entire room in with her. And you couldn't not watch her. And Judy Greer, the same sort of thing. The shot design was like a slow camera push on Judy, and she's supposed to look up and catch my eyes. And so the camera pushes, and I'm like, maybe she didn't understand what I'm saying because she's not looking up. At the last second, she kind of just lifts her eyelids and her eyes. And it was so much better. It was just like, and I was like, oh God, you're good. You get goosebumps, you get thrilled. There's nothing like it.
Nothing like it. And in Judy Greer's case, it struck me. And Julie was similar. They could do it right after having talked about what they were going to make for dinner, or some date that they went on the week before. And like, those people are freaks to me, Judy and Julie Bowen. But you mentioned Judy, like a take after a push in where she looks up. That strikes me as so technical. I remember when I was working with you and we had talked about theater, I'd only done theater. And so I really relied on feeling something and instinct, and I didn't want to be aware of the camera. I remember romanticizing stories about, you know, Brando or these guys who were there, they don't even care about the camera, where the camera's not even there, you know. But what I learned from you is something that you mentioned Judy did, which is, it was the first time that I realized how important an awareness of the camera was in acting. And there was a way to do both. There was a way to incorporate an awareness of the camera, to be smart about, you know, where you are looking, about angles and stuff and editing, and also be deeply committed to the scene. That's something that you were, able to do.
And Brando said this quote, which I write on all my scripts, which was in theater. He said, you have to show the audience what you're thinking. On film, you just have to think it. But the trick is, the thing that separates, I think, good acting from other acting is like actually thinking the thought. Some people are preparing the next line, but there's a vacancy.
Totally.
The wheels are spinning and they've got something going on and they're thinking about something, and you're drawn in, you know?
And Ed, you were the lead of the show. We did it for 4 years. Do you remember, was there a point at which you kind of knew the show was in trouble? You knew that maybe they had run out of ideas. Did you ever feel like, well, it's
so funny, right? I mean, in season one, around episode 6, Rob and I were driving back into the city. At that point, NBC loved us. Mm-hmm. And we had a handshake deal that we would do 4 or 5 seasons. And I think very early on, we sort of found out what it was like to not be wanted, you know? And not in a bad way. They kept an hour-long show that had, you know, a lot of comedy, you know, they took away a half hour of comedy from their lineup and just gave it to us. So that was a semi-generous thing to do. But there was always this sense, I think you might recall, that we were not assured of not being canceled at any point, you know. And the
right. I remember at the end of every season, it was like, I hope I come back.
Yeah. Like Michael Ian Black, when we got picked up for the back nine on the first season, like literally collapsed. And was like, oh, well, I can pay my mortgage. You know, I can buy. Uh-huh. It was one of those things where it's like we weren't. One of the lovely things about that show was, A, we did have job security in ways that it's rare to have, in the sense that you say, hey, you're going to do this for a year. Could end up being 4 years. That was one thing. The other thing about not being West Wing or Friends on NBC, we were so grateful to have that job. We weren't reading press going like, yeah, we are good, you know. And those shows were spectacular. So they should have gotten the accolades and the money that they got. Uh-huh. I remember being so incredibly grateful for it. And I think the idea that it could be yanked from us at any time made you even more grateful.
Were people often asking you about Julie and about you guys on the show getting together and then in life getting together? As I recall, people were always trying to set you up. You were like, you were such a sought after, like a bachelor kind of guy.
Yeah.
But did that happen a lot in the city?
Yeah, it was funny, right? It was funny. Like Julie had gone through, I think, a bit of a breakup, and you know, she got asked out more than any human being. And at one point, we were so close, you know, we got along so well. Like she's just such an incredibly good human being. And so as a friend, you know, you try and be there for her while, you know, this stuff was happening. And at one point I was like, you know, you got to say yes to something, like, you know, you got to get back out there kind of idea, you know, and say yes to some of these requests. And he said, you don't have to marry anybody. You just like go out for lunch. And she's like, I tell you what, Tom Cavanaugh, I will if you will. Because up until then, I'd been like, I'm just doing this show. This is the greatest gift, you know, that, you know.
And time consuming. I mean, so time consuming.
Yeah. And I was, you know, I was like built for it. Like 16 hour days. Like I couldn't get enough. I was just like, it was breathing oxygen. Like the fact that Rob was like, you know, Rob and John, like, this is our guy. He's like, what, me? You know, I was just so like, wanted to not let them down. And
another thing that I've come to appreciate even more is that you had such a well of energy. I had a good 5-6 hours in my tank, but you would go all day and you were smiling and you were keeping people buoyant. And that's rare.
Again, gratitude to be doing the thing that you love with the people that you love. That was an incredible experience. So on that dating thing, you had the same thing. So I would go out on these dates and they'd be disasters. You know, like, you know, it was only when I kind of like, maybe that's not in the cards, you know, and then I met the woman I married.
Were they disastrous because people had these women would have an expectation of you and they were like, oh, I'm going out with Ed. I'm going out with the guy on TV.
I'm not trying to deflect at all.
Yeah.
But I think your story there is much more interesting than mine because, you know, of the age you were at and I think you went through this thing where it's like Ed had a what I like to think of as just like the perfect size profile. We weren't inundated and people knew of it, but you know, not everybody was watching it like religiously the way, you know, a West Wing sort of thing was, right? Which we shared.
That's true.
And so people were aware of me and aware of you and aware of Julie, but it wasn't like the profile Julie had when she went on and did Modern Family and won Emmy after Emmy.
Right.
It's just like, she's like a household thing. And so people were aware of you. And then you took your talents and you weren't typecast because they weren't aware enough of us. They registered Justin Long's name. Now let me see what he can do. And then you walk in a room and audition for whatever movie. And they're like, holy crap.
Well, yeah, to this day, I don't think occasionally get, oh, Ed.
You're talking about it's certainly not a divorcee, right? Is that what you're after?
Yeah.
Life could be a dream, sweetheart. Do, 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 shaboom.
Hiring? Well, with Indeed, your search is over because you can get rid of the search and just match. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. That's because Indeed leverages over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day. It's constantly learning from your preferences. Basically, the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/long. Just go to Indeed.com/long right now and support the show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/long. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Want to hear a really satisfying sound? Here it is. That's the sound I hear when I'm learning a new language with Babbel. And if you want to learn a new language this year, it'll be one of your favorite sounds too. Babbel's designed by real people for real conversations. With Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons that are handcrafted by over 200 language experts, you can start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. I've been loving learning Spanish because I love traveling to Spanish-speaking countries, and I just want to be better at communicating with the people. I love the people there, and I want to be able to get to know them better. I also love the food, so I'd like to be better at ordering food so I don't order the wrong thing. They teach you very practical, real-world language skills. And here's a special limited-time deal for our listeners. Right now, get 55% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at babbel.com/long. Get 55% off at babbel.com/long, spelled BABBEL.com/long. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Hello, hello again. Shaboom, and up we'll meet again.
You have a different experience now, like you mentioned, Julie, on Modern Family. You must have that on The Flash. The Flash is like it's certainly massive with a younger audience. In fact, I'm sure a lot of your audience on that show isn't even aware of Ed. I would say probably the majority of them.
Most people aren't aware of Ed. It's so funny. Like, we're the only show that, you know, got 22 million viewers on an NBC show and did quite well for themselves, won some awards, and no one's ever heard of us because of all the shows that stream, that's the only one of the major show from that era that you can't access. Nobody's aware of it.
I'm sure people ask you that all the time. Why is that? Do you have a good, is it the music licensing? Is it for the seven people listening who want to know?
Yeah.
Why is that?
I honestly don't, you'd have to ask Rob Burnett. It's been explained to me as we had great music during that show, and I think partially because of the Letterman connection, and now the music rights in perpetuity, there's a obstacle there. It seems to me, as someone who's done this for a few decades, it seems to me like that shouldn't be, well, can't do it.
I know.
It seems to be a stumbling block you run into. I just did an episode of Flash, and I wanted to get a Huey Lewis song, Back in Time. So literally, we went back and forth with the music and this kind of thing, and then we got it, you know? And I was like, great, you know? And so I was kind of like, and it took 3/4 of a day, you know, maybe 2 days to sign off. And then I was kind of like, you know, driving home going like, wait a minute. Why can't the scenes that Justin and I did together all those years ago be up streaming? You know, like,
sucks. It sucks because I also have great, because I was really into the they would give me outtakes. They would give me dailies.
I want to see those.
So I got to send you some of these. I will send you some. I have the best. Fun stuff.
If you look at what's happening in the world and everybody's sort of looking for feel good content, certainly.
Yeah.
That show kind of checked that box. Like, it's a solid family show, you know. There's not a lot of blood and semen, you know. There's not
not a lot. Season 4, there was more semen.
I mean, it's like a show that you can kind of like, it kind of should be on there, but it's not.
Yeah. I think I know the answer to this, but was there an adjustment period after Ed ended? And then I know you started doing Scrubs, which is another huge show, but was there a period where you were like, ah, fuck, now what am I going to do? I'm back, you know, I'm back auditioning and trying to get out there.
I mean, I'd ask you the same question. Like, how are you when a project ends? I think I don't look back. You know what I mean?
And so
I try to just like, okay, this is what we're doing now. And I don't know how healthy the psychology is behind that, but I also, like I say, try to proceed from gratitude. So I was like completely grateful for everything that we'd had, and, you know, grateful that I had had that opportunity, and that was my mindset. Now let's see, you know, what else there is to do. You know, I don't think it's ever easy for a project that you love to end, right? I think, you know, even when you know you're doing theater and you have a close date, but you love it, it's hard, you know, but that's just part of, we knew Ed would end it probably one point sooner than later. And so the one thing I am grateful for is I've been part of shows, and I'm sure you've been part of things where you're set to do it and then you don't get to do it, you know, and that's difficult in its own right, isn't it? And the nice thing about ours is like, they basically told us, you're not coming back. And so we knew, and we could say goodbye together, and there's a grace to that, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Did when people when you run into crew members, now I'm thinking about all these people.
Yeah.
How often do you see like Josh Randall, or how often do you see these people? Do you ever see them in Vancouver?
I don't see anybody as much as I would like, but they're in my heart for sure. And I do a podcast. Can I plug another podcast called Mate?
Oh yeah,
Michael Ian Black.
What's it called? Tom and Mike Eat a Snack.
Yes, Mates. Mike and Tom Eat Snacks. And we did that. We came out of that podcast basically because on Ed, our favorite thing was lunch, and he would count down. I don't know if you remember this. He would count down 2 hours to lunch, hour to lunch. I'm not going to snack now because it's 45 minutes to lunch. And so we made a podcast called Mike and Tom Eat Snacks for the sole purpose of getting together, you know?
Oh my God, that's great.
If anyone's going to like this podcast, you like this podcast, because basically what this podcast is, Justin, is the moments between cut and action where we're just waiting for people to set stuff up. We're having snacks. Like I urge you to start with episode 27, Lorna Doone. It's not really got – it's Lorna Doone's shortbread, but Michael tells a story about how he was the main guy cast for Swearingen in Deadwood. And they were like, you were the guy? Like, you were the skinny little – and he was like, oh, yeah, I walked in. They just knew. They just knew it was me. And he tells, like, a 40-minute tale about how he got laryngitis. And then he had brought – what's his name? Ian McShane from the Old Vic to be a background performer because he tries to help his friends out. And I'm like, but doesn't laryngitis go away? We didn't know. Back then, we didn't know. We thought that was it.
And he's so dry. He's so dry that I'm sure people listening to that are like, oh my God, this isn't actually.
This guy was really the, you know, Deadwood.
Yeah.
On his Twitter account, he's got 9 years in the NFL, 2 rings, and he still gets people. That's his like header. And he still gets, like, still gets people going like, I don't remember you. I don't remember you. Who'd you play for?
That's amazing. Yeah. This is Michael Ian Black from The State and Wet Hot American Summer. I always wanted to make him laugh. To get a laugh out of Michael was like, oh, man, my day was made. So you had mentioned going to Vancouver and thinking it was going to be temporary. When you realize that that show is going to be a hit and it's going to be on for a while, what does that mean in terms of now are you like, oh, fuck, I got to move my whole family up there? Is it a welcome thing? Is it exciting?
As you know, it's like, oh, we're going to have employment, you know, that we can count on. Yeah. That's an impressive thing. For a while, Greg Berlanti, who runs the, you know, like, he's just such a prolific Hollywood producer, and this is our third show together, he kept casting me in parts that were not like the nice guy. And this part is, if I do in The Flash, is ostensibly like the villain. And what was interesting is, like, after doing that for a bit, like, the interest that would came in would be like sort of like for bad guys, you know? So like, I was really grateful, I think, about like what the show offered to be seen sort of in another way.
In a different light, because that's not easy to shake. I mean, when you're the nice guy, when you're like in that's so indelible as the nice guy in people's mind, I mean, that's, you need somebody like Greg Berlanti with that kind of juice.
Have you had that? Do you find, like, I mean, people are always like,
oh God, yeah. You know, Tom, the big thing for me that I had to get past was, of all things, a commercial, those Apple commercials. And I thought it was going to be a one-off kind of thing. And I thought they were going to have me play the PC because I'd only been playing kind of nerdy character parts up until then. And he said, no, they want you to play the quote unquote cool guy. And that was exciting at the time. I was like, oh, cool, that, you know, everyone's, all the nerdy guys want to be the cool guy. So I did it. And then we did another round of them, and then another year of them. And then they became like this, it became a big kind of ubiquitous thing. And I started getting offers from that to play the cool guy, the leading guy. And I thought, okay, that's exciting. In a movie, I get to play the cool guy. And, you know, in retrospect, I'm grateful for all of them. I think what that did was it then, yeah, you start playing that same part. And you didn't want to say it on Ed, but I'll say it. It's not as fun playing a cool guy, playing a guy who's, you know, who's got to carry everything and he's got to make the right choices. And it's so much more fun. I feel like we're two nice guys, you know, and as an actor, you want to play the guy that you're not necessarily, you want to explore the darkness a little bit. Yeah.
The good thing that the cool guy as portrayed by you in those commercials, but in subsequent roles that you would see is like, your guy was also like, nobody was saying, but don't be funny. You know what I mean? Like, which thank God, you know what I mean? Like you had the ability to bring like, not overt comedy, but like, you know, just like a subtle, you know, wink or whatever the thing was.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
As opposed to, which I think is, which I
just
think
the boring is, straight guy.
Yeah, and I think that's important because I think it's easy to get into that other thing for the cool guys. Like, no, we're gonna give like the humor to the slapstick buddy, but not you.
Yeah.
Because you know, cool guys aren't funny, but you managed to bridge that those two things, I think.
You told a story about your dad, and I'm blanking on it, on Michael, on Rosie's podcast.
Oh, yeah.
About a piece of advice that he gave you. But I also remember you had a fascinating upbringing. You traveled a lot, and I remember Ghana specifically.
As you know, Justin, my father recently passed away, and you reflect on a lot of things. You're never really ready to have a loved one pass on, but when they do, and you can look at their life and say like they didn't leave those stones unturned. They did good and they made the most of their time. That's a brilliant thing. You know, I'm grateful, you know, because I know he was grateful for the experiences he had. And, you know, his one of his favorite sentences or phrases is count your blessings, count your blessings. And he saw that we'd be in difficult situations in Africa or whatever. And, you know, he'd find some positive, you know, to come out of it. He moved to Africa and there was no house where there was supposed to be a house at this college that he was teaching at for his family. And they didn't have a place.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Can you imagine like upending, bringing your family, you know, a big family with little children. Yeah. There's nowhere for you to live. You can sleep on these concrete floors, which we did.
You know? Oh, you wanted a real house.
No, there's no house. But what he said,
I thought you said a louse.
And it dovetails into what he said at college, which is like he said, you know, you don't want to worry about the little things because they're not worth worrying about. And the big things take care of themselves. So don't worry because you can. You can worry. Yeah, try not to. And this is coming from a person who was a worrier.
Was he really?
Yeah. Like he was genetically predisposed to like have concerns. And he fought to overcome those, which I think makes it even that much more compelling because it wasn't naturally easy breezy, like, hey, it's all fine. You know, it's like he saw the difficulty and he could fall down into the difficulty or he could try to overcome it, you know, which is, you know, that had a big thing about influencing the acting in that I think you know this, but I think there's a massive difference between playing the obstacle or playing the overcoming of the obstacle. I think the obstacle is much more interesting to do and much more interesting to watch. People want to lean in to see that person who's not having pity on themselves about the obstacle. And I think my father was that way. The other thing he said was, as he dropped me off in college, he said, if I wanted to, I could have worried about money every day of my life. That's a tremendous thing to say to someone who's going to go into a profession where you can worry about money all the time, right? And even now, like when I look at like the state of the world and how difficult it is, like really difficult it is for so many people, I appreciate that I was guided by someone smarter than me to go like, there's much bigger problems out there than the stuff that you're dealing with. And so you need to be aware, put your worries in the right place.
I'm really grateful to him. I didn't know him, but he really made an incredible person. And I bet he was so proud of you. I bet he was just, you're just one of the best. And I owe you so much. And I'm you know, so grateful to you. And so I'm grateful to him. I really always will be. What happened when you did show up in Ghana and there was nothing there for him? I mean, how many kids were there? Do you have recollections of that?
Sure. Oh yeah. There was four kids at the time, and soon to be five.
And you were the youngest, right?
I was not. I was the second eldest, and I have three younger sisters.
Oh.
There's an older brother.
Oh wow.
But what I remember is they had such big shit to deal with that we could do anything we wanted, and for the like nobody there was no repercussions. So I distinctly remember that the college, you could have tea and you could put sugar in, and we were not allowed to have sugar really. And I could put as much effing sugar as I wanted in that tea. I could make like sugar with a little bit of tea, and no one was like, hey, taking it out of my hands. They were busy trying to find housing, you know?
Places to live. You get a little sugar hills with like a droplet of tea on top.
I can go down on the beach here. I can eat tea infused sugar. This is great. You know,
was there wildlife all around, and was it really like untamed?
You know, we were on the coast of Africa, and a lot of green, a lot of vegetation. I remember there were early on, like you saw a lot of snakes, which, you know, snakes, why'd it have to be snakes? But then you just kind of got used to it. It wasn't like Serengeti safari life. It was, you know, coastal.
It's more tropical.
Coastal tropical vibe. You know, big fishing.
Wow.
Big fishing place. And yeah, tremendous, tremendous place.
And how long were you there, Tom?
So the family spent 3 years in Ghana, and he went 3 years in Malawi.
Oh, wow.
And my sister spent 3 years, or maybe more, I might have this wrong, in Zimbabwe. We do the same with nothing but nets. And so I went back to like hand out, like, it's for malaria nets.
Yeah.
Went back to all these refugee camps in Uganda. And so I've actually, you know, for a North American, spent, you know, years worth of time in Africa and don't profess to know it at all. It's so strange, right? It's like every place is just so different from every place. It's just it's just so eye-opening. And even as somebody who spent, you know, part of his youth there, don't really profess to know it at all. But great.
Wow.
I've been there.
So you still go back with nothing but nets?
I haven't been back in anywhere near as much as the idea there. So nothing but nets is the whole idea was to like counter malaria by providing nets to families. Very simple pipeline where $10 bought you a net, and then you could count the net, and then you could hand the net out. So I liked that part of it. It wasn't a difficult pipeline. So then we started like, you know, just trying to host like basketball related events to raise money and stuff and take nets over. It's very, you know, like the stats about how efficient it is to combat malaria with a net are stunning. You know, it's just like mortality rate just plummets, and
nothing but nets dot net. Oh, thank God it's dot net. And
right,
life could be a dream, sweetheart. Do 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 shaboom.
If you run an e-commerce business, you know the amount of work it takes to produce something great.
So if you want to optimize your workflow and reduce costs, ShipStation is the multi-carrier shipping solution that integrates wherever you sell online.
ShipStation's simple dashboard makes managing orders, smooth label printing, reporting, and customer service unbelievably easy.
With shipping configurations automatically applied, you can effortlessly import orders from everywhere you sell online.
Plus, save thousands on shipping costs with discounts up to 89% off UPS, DHL Express, and USPS rates. Over 130,000 companies have grown their e-commerce businesses with ShipStation.
ShipStation is the innovative tool that helps turn your shipping challenges into opportunities for growth.
Go to ShipStation.com and use code LONG to sign up for your free 60-day trial.
That's ShipStation.com, code LONG.
When your work presentations and docs look good, you look good.
Design stunning work presentations, docs, whiteboards, and videos with Canva.
Start with a designer-made template and use it as a springboard for your design.
Add images, graphics, charts, and more from Canva's massive media library.
If you feel like you have a lot of ideas, but it's hard to organize them into a succinct format, I can relate.
Yeah, so when we're putting together a pitch deck for a movie idea that we have that we're currently working on, we're not going to use an old-fashioned deck. We're going to use Canva so our deck really pops. It's a complete game changer. So presenting our creative ideas, it's going to be like never before. We're going to wow people with our decks.
Wow any audience and finish your work faster.
Start designing today at canva.com, designed for work.
Hello, hello again, shaboom, and up we'll meet again.
Do you use emojis when you text? Uh-huh. Are you an emoji?
Isn't that terrible?
Yeah.
I sure do.
You don't?
I do.
You do?
I do.
Well, that,
do you?
This is not terrible. I'm asking a question about what your most commonly used one is. What is your go-to? I'd like to see your whole lineup, your most recently used. I'm sure there's an eggplant in there. I'm guessing there's a turd.
I don't think I've ever sent a turd. What's your?
I feel like I do a lot of this one. Ooh, the teeth kind of, you know, like, oh, sorry. You know, like the teeth together clenched. Yeah. I do a kind of like submissive smiley one, like looking down a little bit lot. I punctuate a lot with like, okay. you know, I'll do the cherry and the eggplant. I'm not above it.
Yeah. I think
a little sprinkle of water.
That's good stuff. I think mine are like, it's just boring. It's like, there's like a, you know, a blue heart and a yellow heart and a baseball, a lot of baseball. This guy.
What? Yeah, they're really excited. That's, yeah, I could see that. That's you. That's Tim Busfield. That's Tim's face.
I like that you have this one. That's funny to me. I got it.
Because it's like, sorry. I don't know.
I got to pick that guy into the rotation. That's strong.
It's useful. If you could be I know this one, but if you could be a professional athlete, what sport would you play?
Oh, man.
And why?
That's such a great question. Because it'd have to be basketball, right?
You played in college.
Yeah. And it would be, I think it would have to be basketball because it was like, you know, because of the college thing and all this. But I've also had this story, like this idea, like when you discuss it, it's like, well, wait a minute. Basketball, it takes a toll. Hockey, I'm Canadian. You know, I still play, Rob Burnett and I still play in a hockey league together.
Oh, really?
Yeah, true story.
What?
And it's great. It's good. You know, Rob doesn't do anything halfway. Rob has a rink. Rob has jerseys. Rob has a scoreboard. Rob has plexiglass. Rob has, like, it's
what?
It's incredible. And it is the highlight of the week for so many of the people who gather, you know, in the barn and, like, put on the skates and go play. It's just, it's incredible. So I still play hockey. The thing, though, is, like, you could be a baseball pitcher, throw once every 5 days, and play till 40.
Yeah.
You could have a paunch. You could do that and, like, you know, you could actually have a little bit of longevity. These people make $60 billion, you know, a season. It's like, So.
You were playing basketball all the time now that I'm remembering. Wasn't there a hoop right off set?
That was one of the two things I had in my contract that we had to, like in terms of perks – like we had to have a hoop, you know, we had to put a hoop on set.
And you play in Vancouver still? You got a league in Vancouver?
Yeah. It's interesting because there's an acting community wherever you go, right? And there's the same thing with the basketball community. Like when I moved to New York, like some of the people I came closest with were people who I didn't even really know their last names. They were just guys that I played basketball with, you know, in the week. You know, like we would just see each other. And we would play hoops and you'd hang out afterwards and you know, no one knew it, you know, like there was no hierarchy. We were just ball players, which I love, you know? And so every town I've gone to, you kind of discover that it's a welcoming, you know, it's nice to have a community that will welcome you because of a shared.
Yeah. If you could have one snack food for the rest of your life, what would that be?
You know, you're talking to a professional. So this is a.
Yeah, you got very serious.
Yeah, I did. I was like, oh, man, come on.
Tom just exhaled in a very serious way.
I will say this, like people ask, you know, like, because I do a superhero show, I hear like, if you could have one superpower.
Oh, we're getting to that.
I'm prone to saying the ability to eat pizza with no deleterious effect.
Oh, that's good.
Right?
I mean, it's not, it's very selfish.
Yeah, yeah.
There's not much you could, there's not much you can do with that superpower for other people.
Excuse me.
So you're helping the local pizza place.
Can you lift this building? No, I can't.
Give me 1 minute.
I can't lift the building.
Can't right now. The cheese is going to congeal.
You could have one snack food. What would it be?
You know, Pirate's Booty.
Yes.
They make a cheddar puff. Yeah.
Do you know Cheetos? They make a... Have you heard of...
Well, I don't know. I don't know what... I don't know what Canadians are into. Well, Canadians have things that we've never heard of, I'm sure.
Poutine.
Yeah. Yeah. Poutine. But I'm sure there are candies that are like, well, you know Blub Blubs, right? It's sort of like a blub blub, eh? Pizza flavored goldfish too are hard for me to put down. Whoa. See, I often occasionally get have a little weed and I'll get snacky. And there's certain foods. If there's a bag, I have to play tricks with myself. I have to like wrap it up really tightly and put it somewhere that you know. Somewhere it's difficult to get to. Those are my poisons: Chessmen, Pepperidge Farm.
Yes. Yeah.
What's your favorite movie of all time? Or an easier question, I guess, would be, what would your like quarantine comfort movie be if you wanted a something you're like with your kids, you're like, I can't wait to show this to you.
Probably Die Hard, but not Die Hard the first one, the fourth one maybe.
Shut up.
You know what's funny?
All right, good answer.
You know what's funny about watching that is knowing you as I know, and like I don't know Bruce Willis at all, but I imagine him going, this fucking guy.
Well, you know, it's funny. When I was thinking about your patience and thinking about other experiences I've had with people who, you know, have less patience.
Yeah,
some people have less patience than you,
of course.
Tom.
I'm Bruce damn Willis. Stop improvising.
Yeah.
You know what? Comfort food for me, like there's certain movies that anytime they come on, you know, I'll just be like, all right, I'm sitting down and doing this, I guess. You know, what's interesting enough is Die Hard shows all the time. That's definitely, that is one of them, you know, in Popa Greenwich Village. Definitely worth seeing. I wonder if there's any other stuff that I could throw out that I like Gallipoli. I don't know if you've seen Gallipoli. There's like different.
Oh, Gallipoli,
like,
yeah.
Buddy movies, like the buddy movie genre, like Midnight Run.
Oh, yeah. What about Bob? You like?
What about Bob? Yeah, good genre.
I love that genre. Gallipoli is so fucking good. I haven't heard that in years.
Not unsung, but things that maybe wouldn't be in the mainstream right now. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's funny you mentioned Brando's, like Streetcar. I'll watch his opening scene in Streetcar like again and again and again. Just like, what is he doing? I remember what an effect that had on me as a young actor watching him in that movie and not being able to articulate what it was that he was doing, you know, but just knowing that whatever it was he was doing was, I couldn't take my eyes off him, you know, like, and that, how much of an effect that had, because there's a grail that you want to go grasp, right?
Yeah. And then it becomes, when you realize that that's a profession, something that you could do as an adult, then it becomes so exciting. That the idea of doing that becomes so compelling to be able to affect. I remember seeing Stand By Me and watching that scene with River Phoenix where he's talking about the stolen lunch money. And those were kids my age, you know, and I remember thinking like, I was so affected by what I was seeing them do.
Sure.
And there were no effects. It was just two people being present. If you had to live somewhere else, where would it be?
I love the fact that I get to split time between New York and Vancouver, you know. Most New Yorkers are like, New York, where else are we going to live? You know, sort of like, you know, if it was just pure fantasy. I did spend some time in New Zealand. First off, the whole country's a beach, basically, or right next to a beach, because it's like, there's the, you know, you got to get a packery beach, you know. This is another nice beach.
Oh, yeah, of course you did. Yogi.
Yogi, yeah.
Which I saw in the theater.
No.
Because you and Anna, my two pals were in it. Yeah. Oh, man, you're great. That's a perfect example of a movie where, like, a performance like that is so unsung. Nobody's going to watch that and be like, God, the acting, because it doesn't support acting. But what you're doing in it is so fucking good.
and hard. I know how hard those, you know, because you're acting with the green, you know, with the little tennis balls, and you're great in that, Tom. You and Anna are so good.
That's never been said before, and I really appreciate it.
Well, because I know what it takes. I know. I can say it. I have authority.
I know you did.
That's right. You guys did that in New Zealand.
The people were just so great, you know, like everybody was just so, you know, it's like it's a country of like just spontaneous and generous and genuine humans. And that makes your daily life better. You know, you look at what they're doing. Look at what they're doing with the pandemic. Look at what they're doing with, you know, like with gun laws. And you're like, these are just people who get it. They're regulars. Like, oh, this is bad. Well, let's get rid of it. You know, this is good. Let's
fix it.
You know,
Save
ourselves by doing this. Let's do that. You know, what is it, like 100 days and no recorded cases? It's like,
it's amazing.
You know, there's a lot to be said for like common sense, you know, and the Kiwis town, you know, that's a place that I would be, you know, quite happy. And I also wonder what it's like to be one of those people that goes off the grid and lives in like one of those like beach island. I remember thinking like Lost as a TV show shooting in Hawaii. Those guys have got this figured out. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He's just like, oh, yeah, you're going to go shoot your show in Hawaii. Are you okay? You know, so.
Yeah, I know. I've never had that experience really, but I've heard from people who are like, yeah, it's the best. Why would it not be? If you could have dinner with three people, dead or alive, whom you've never met, who would they be?
Oh, this is one of those questions. I mean, for me, someone who's like Tom Hanks, someone who's, you know, directed and performed and is an American icon. I know it's not like three people, but to me, it's like if I could sit down and talk to that guy about his challenges and what his way of like making the world a better place and how he approaches his fame and his projects, is like that would be definitely be a meal well spent.
Yeah, I agree. I would love that too. Who is your favorite? This is going to be even more of a challenge, I know. Who's your favorite Muppet?
Who's that behind that Darth Vader mask? You will never guess. You know?
Uh-huh.
You know, then I start thinking like, well, wait a minute. Like, there's a couple more I kind of can't do without. Even like, you know, if I go up to Waldorf and stand on the balcony, just kind of like, he's a pillage idiot. You know, he was a no good Lord, take a Viking to you. Like just the worst jokes. And I'm like, the fact that somebody thought, let's put people in who hate the Muppets, who are Muppets.
It's brilliant.
The stroke of that.
Yeah.
Like,
this is when you know someone knows the Muppets well, when they say Waldorf and Statler, instead of like the classic Statler and Waldorf.
Oh.
The way you describe them. I love Beaker and Bunsen Honeydew, probably for the similar reasons I like Laurel and Hardy. I like that one is kind of like is the authority figure, the taskmaster, and the other one is just kind of going along with it and not as bright, and they look funny to me. I love those two. I love the Swedish Chef. I was always fascinated by his hands.
Always like the fact that there's hands. Yeah. You can't really go, like, I remember, like, even Fozzie Bear's like, you know, a bear in his natural habitat, a Studebaker, it's so big, right? So big and broad, you're like, okay, I love that too.
It's weird to say this now, I've never occurred to me, but there was, like, a real humanity to them, you know, like, Fozzie Bear had real, like, pathos, and there's a great montage in, I think it's Muppets Take Manhattan, where they all go their separate ways.
Yeah.
It's really like heartbreaking where they're like missing each other. Yeah.
Yeah.
If you really want to just rip all the emotions out, there's a beautiful tribute that they pay to Jim Henson at his funeral. Wow. Have you seen this on YouTube?
I haven't
where
seen
they, yeah.
I imagine.
They, yeah. Just, they sing.
I imagine it would knock you down. So good.
If you had to be one age for the rest of your life, physically, what would you pick?
That's a great, it's a great question. You could go really, really youth, but then you're not grateful. You know what I mean? Here's a perfect example. You know, I played college basketball, and I was a pretty quick guard, but I relied so much on physical ability, and I became a much better player in my 30s. Like not even close. Mm. I was more confident. Huh. You know, my playing days were overtly, and when I'm playing days, I mean, like, you know, college competition. But
yeah.
I was just like, if I'd known the things that I'd known, you know, in college that I know now, the way I can control things, yeah. the way I see the court, the way I play off tendencies, the way that I don't just rely on doing like one, what, like I'm, you know, like I'm crafting something a little bit more. Mm. I'm setting somebody up a little bit more. Like it just became like a smarter.
It's funny. I feel that way about acting.
For sure. It's true, yeah. though. It's like you look at the stuff that you did when you were young, you're like, oh, God, you know?
Yeah.
I personally can't look at it, like, and because it's just, you know, and then you're like, oh, okay, you're always, you know, you're always climbing. You're always trying to learn. You're always trying to,
yeah.
trying to get better, you know? And
yeah.
I don't know.
That's why it'd have to be a combination of, that's why the fun thing, the fantasy element of the question is that it would be, purely physically, I mean, it would be like what your body was like and what your, how you were physically, and then I guess coupled with what you know now. I guess you don't want to be like a 3-year-old.
Or do you?
Or do you? Yeah. I don't know. Playing all the time.
A 3-year-old like falls down and doesn't have far to fall and gets back up. And it's just like,
it's true.
If you look at like little children, and one of the great things that they do is like they contort their body into, like, if they're going to read a book, you know, they read a book like, you know, like, it doesn't have to, like, we're sitting in a chair. Whereas like a kid is like, when you see them and you're just like, that's perfect. There's no, like, there's no conditioning that's occurred that said, like, this is how you must read a book. You must be in
the Yes, right? It's the best.
And which is, you know, there's something joyous about that. Like, oh, I'm just discovering and exploring all this stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, see, that's the thing that we get to do versions of that. I mean, we're encouraged to play, which is, you know, again, this 12th time we've said gratitude, but one of the things I'm so grateful for is that we get to play like that and not have those societal constraints about how you're sitting, and we're encouraged to be as, you know, free as possible, and free like a kid is free.
Yeah, you're creating something, and it's like anything goes, you know. I like that. It's just like, that's one of the best things about it, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh God, yeah. If you could be reincarnated as a non-human animal, what would you pick?
That's a really good question.
You have a dog, I hear.
Yeah, and that might be a good call, a dog, because they're getting like the best of the human experience, right? They're not getting any of the anxiety. They're just like, I'm happy to see you. We're going to spend time together. You're amazing. Let's share a meal. You don't have to eat. I'll eat. I got to go crap. So let's do that together, right? You know, I got to go pee. Let's go do that together, you know? I'm like, hey, man, let's run for a bit. And then now that I'm done running, I'm just going to lie here.
Yeah.
You know?
Tom, really quick. Yeah. I ask everybody how they want to be, or if they think about this, if you think about being remembered or your legacy, do you ever think about things like that? And certainly now, are you, do you ever think about how you want to be remembered?
That's such a great question. I think the short answer is no, I don't. I don't know that I think about legacy for legacy's sake, to be perfectly frank. I don't know that I spend time considering it, and perhaps I should. I think my philosophy comes down more to like, you try and like win the day, and you tend to fail again and again and again, but you want the effort to be there, right? To try and set as good an example as you can. You know, like that's one of the mantras: proceed from gratitude, make it better, be grateful for your time. Do that now. You know, one of the greatest weaknesses I think I've always had is looking beyond now. And so legacy is born out of trying to do things the right way. Not that I'm saying I do that, But
it's not a legacy in terms of what you are leaving or what how people think of you, or it's how you live your life. It's a day to day. It's a legacy that will whatever continues of you, let's say, will be the result of what you do today. And
with this question, I think it'd be better to draw attention to my failings, because in a sports analogy, the losses always tend to hurt more than the wins. You know what I mean? And so I think that I think you're striving to accumulate wins, and knowing that your reality is, you know, a multitude of losses that you, I guess, are striving daily to try to turn into wins.
I just got suddenly very jealous of your kids, because they have two of the best parents. I'm thinking, I can't wait to meet them one day. They're going to be, I would be shocked if they weren't like exceptionally evolved, you know, just impressive people, because they got two of the best parents.
They're very entertaining. I can't wait to meet them. Very loud.
Oh, I bet. Well, I just love you
so
much.
Seeing your face. Awesome to see your face.
Always.
Makes my week.
I can't wait to see it in person.
Yeah, man. All right. Love you.
See you, buddy.
So
that happened.
Yeah, better. Definitely a well.
Well,
he has
I love his L's.
Me too. Yeah. He's just such a burst of energy, isn't he? Like a burst of positive without being phony. That's rare.
You know, he genuinely seems like he loves being alive.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
He seems like he loves life.
Yeah.
He has such positive.
What is it called? Joie de vivre?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mom used to say that a lot.
Yeah, she did. Now it sounds pretentious.
I know. But he does have that, like a zest for, and I remember that about, I was so spoiled to have that as my like earliest formidable memory of being an actor, a professional actor, but.
Formative.
Oh, what? Not formidable.
No.
Yeah. Formidable. Oh, boy. But anyway, yeah, I was lucky because he just brought that to a set every day. And that, you know, I'm sure it's like that in any line of work where the person on top, so to speak, he kind of sets the tone for how to be. And Tom really did that. And it just brought out the best in everyone. It was such a great environment to work in.
It's funny he said that he would want to have dinner with Tom Hanks, because he's always kind of reminded me of Tom Hanks. He's got that, like, just effortlessly charming, wholesome, relatable quality to him.
Yeah.
I had never visited the show because I was in college at the time. And I just met him for the first time a few months ago at that basketball game we went to.
Oh, wow.
So it was
really?
So bizarre. I'd like that's known so of weird. Him for so many years. And
oh, that's so weird
I
to
was
me.
A fan of his show, obviously. But I used to watch that show when I was in college, like in the common, you know, every hallway.
Yeah.
Because we didn't have a TV in our room. So, like, we would all watch the show in the common room. So I was
so, nice.
So aware of him for years, and I knew you looked up to him so much. So it's strange that I don't know him. But
what was
when
it like
I when I met
him,
it felt like, oh, this is he's exactly like his character on the show. He's just like this breezy, friendly, like funny, charming guy.
And for those of you who watched the show, his best friend, played by Josh Randall, when they're together, they're very much like those two characters. I saw Eugene Levy the other day, except he won the Emmy, which is obviously very well deserved. He's a genius. But it struck me how different Eugene Levy was from the characters that I know him so well from, like Waiting for Guffman or, you know, Mighty Wind or something. He seemed just so but whereas Tom, to me, is like, I mean, he's really playing a version of himself, I think, which is not easy to do. That's not like to say he's not as versatile. And now I really want to see The Flash. I'm embarrassed, a bad friend, that I haven't seen The Flash, because he plays a bad guy on that show. He plays a villain.
There's a huge following that show has.
Huge, I
In
know.
In fact, and people who are tuning into this episode because they love The Flash are going to be sorely disappointed.
Yeah, I know, they're probably not listening anymore.
So sorry.
Sorry. And sorry, and the guy who plays The Flash, Grant Gustin, is supportive on, I know him from Instagram. He's like my Instagram friend. He just seems like the nicest. He seems like a younger version of Tom.
And so I really need to watch that show. I heard it's great. I heard it's great. But anyway.
It was very moving how he talked about his dad, who just passed away, and and how he imparted that very important lesson on him, to count your blessings. And he talked about his dad as being a natural worrier. So he had to overcome that kind of natural predisposition in order to be grateful and aware of, you know, what's the good things around you.
Yeah. So he doesn't get hung up on.
Yeah. And I realized when he said that, like, oh, God, of course I know that there are people who are predisposed to worrying and people who aren't. But I've never heard it said so, like, obviously. Like,
yeah,
like
clinically. Yeah.
Like, he was a worrier.
Yeah.
He was a natural worrier. And I realized, oh, shit, I'm a natural worrier.
Yeah, me too.
And
That somebody could overcome that.
Yeah, that's impressive to me, that his father, whom I've never met, was able to overcome that natural predisposition.
And yeah, and make a point to do so for not only to better his own life, but to better the lives of his kids, those who the kids who are really absorbing his energy and looking to him for guidance. I mean, that's admirable. And then you see the product of that, which is Tom, who to me, I mean, it's hard for me to imagine a more evolved person. I mean, I so admire his ideology, his mindset, you know, the way he sees the world, the way he behaves. I just really admire him.
Mm-hmm. He's like Fred Rogers.
Yeah,
he's got Mr. Rogers vibes.
He does. He does.
He's wholesome too. He also, like, you could tell he didn't really want to swear. He said effin a couple times. Which I find really charming.
Me too. And he's like, it's funny though, but it's not.
You don't both have to find it charming when someone doesn't want to say fuck. I think he hit the nail on the head when he talked about your penchant for lateness. I think he's completely right because you are someone, talk about a natural predisposition, you're someone who is naturally predisposed to being late. And I will say you've gotten better over the years at being on time, but your natural state is lateness. And he said, and he's right, that you never really got better at not being late because
he said it in a very nice way.
Yeah, because people always wanted to see you. And once you showed up at a place, people were excited that you were there, so you never learned your lesson.
That's not good.
It's not good, but I'm thinking of we have a friend in common who does not enjoy your lateness and does not let you off the hook easily.
So with him,
you're always on time.
Yeah.
So it's just about, it's like.
In fact, I get stressed out meeting him when we're leading up to meeting him. I'm stressed out now because I'm meeting a friend. I'm supposed to pick up a friend today from the train station, and I know when she's arriving, and it's like, but. It's not for another, you know, hour and a half, 2 hours, but I'm already kind of stressing about
it. You are?
Yeah.
That surprises me.
Yeah. Well, I was dating a girl once who, we didn't fight for the longest time. We had like the first, I don't know how many months, were just like bliss. And one day I was late picking her up and she got very, very upset.
So with this one particular male friend and all women, you're on time for.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
It's just who lets you get away with it.
That's not good. Someone said to me once, and I'm sure there's truth to this, that it's a microaggression. It's a subconscious microaggression. I
don't know if that's true. I think it's just.
I don't know. Maybe not an aggression, but like a sign of some sort of a lack of respect.
I think if there are no consequences to a particular situation, I think a person won't change.
I've gotten better with waiting. Especially now, like, I mean, we're all getting better at it, I think. It used to drive me nuts if somebody was 5-10 minutes late. I hated being idle, you know? And I hate to say this, but maybe the phone has something to do with it. Like, well, I can sit and
I didn't want to say that.
Yeah, I can look at my.
There's something to do now, always.
I know.
It's funny, he was imagining how annoyed Bruce Willis must have been working with you. And he's probably right. Well, I'm sure Bruce Willis was annoyed working with you.
He was.
But also, I think at the same time, I think Tom probably sees you and will always see you in a way as a 20-year-old kid that he used to work with. Because you haven't spent that much time with him over the years.
That's true.
You might be kind of stuck as a kid in his brain.
Less mature. I know I've matured as an actor. I've definitely, looking at those outtakes or those dailies from shooting that show with Tom, I was just so undisciplined.
Having said that, I do think if you were in a movie with Bruce Willis now, the 40-year-old
virgin of you. That's Freudian slip.
Oh, boy.
The 40-year-old.
No, no. Wait a minute.
The 40-year-old version of you would probably still annoy him.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean?
It's, yeah, of course. It's
not like you've totally grown up and become sophisticated.
No, but also, like, Bruce wasn't crazy about ad-libbing.
Antics.
Yeah, but that makes it sound like I was going way outside the, you know, I was going outside my lane.
He wasn't into fun.
Not really. Mm-hmm. he definitely loosened up more as we shot.
Maybe a future guest.
Oh, that'd be great.
Not if he hears this.
No, I mean, even if he hears this, I think Bruce is probably like confident enough to be like, oh, okay, well, yeah, I was a little annoyed in the beginning. And mm-hmm. I wasn't crazy about ad-libbing. Yeah, I just don't think he comes from that. Some people are predisposed to ad-lib. Some people are more old school and aren't into it. It's a very different. You don't have to do that when you're, yes, certainly when you're Bruce Willis.
No, he can do whatever he wants. He, Tom got very excited by the lightning round questions, and he was so excited to answer the questions. You know,
he's got such a childlike enthusiasm.
He kept saying, "Oh, that's a great question."
Yeah, okay, he's so great.
And I liked how he really thought through the sports one in a way that I don't know if we've had a guest yet who has thought it through in like a very real way. Like, my favorite sport is this, but do I want
the realities of playing?
Yeah, do I want to be a 40-year-old with a pot belly who just has to do one thing every 5 days and get paid millions of dollars? That seems pretty appealing to
well,
me.
Because he takes sports very seriously.
He does.
He like loves sport. And remember on the show, and for the 2% of you who watch the show still listening, Tom's character and his best friend used to play this game called 10 Bucks. Like, for 10 bucks, would you go and do this? They were hypothetical games. Basically, like, would you rather type games. That came from Tom and Robert, the creators, doing similar kind of things. They like to play with questions like that, kind of like idiotic hypotheticals. Mm-hmm. Which
that sounds familiar.
Yeah, it sure does.
Let's read a letter.
Okay. How would you say this name? Because I'm tempted to say Bridget.
Bridget.
Yeah, I guess Bridget. Yeah.
I knew a couple Bridgets.
You really?
Yeah.
Why would you... I mean,
I wonder how often in Bridget's life she has to clarify. Bridget, that's with a D, not a T. People must constantly be.
And I'm sure a lot
thinking
of
thinking it's Bridget.
Yeah, I'm sure a lot of Bridgets have to say. By the way, it's with a D. Yeah, a lot of Bridgets probably have to say like frigid.
You think?
Probably, like the
Bridget,
way
like fridge. That's easy. That makes it easy.
It makes it easier, right? They're probably sick of having to be like it's a D instead of.
Like our friend Kier.
I was just there. You don't both have to think of Kier when it comes to like describing him.
My name's Kier. It's like beer with a K. Yeah, that's his line.
Yeah, he says it.
Even though it's not spelled beer with a K, it's pronounced beer with a K. It's K-E-I-R.
There's so many times where I think now when I think of Kier, when I think of the name Kier, I'm like immediately because he said it. I've been around him when he said it that many times. It's a beer with a K. Okay. Subject. Thank you.
Let me see.
Am I losing my mind?
I think she means that I is like a little barrier, like a slash.
Thank you.
Would you rather?
It's like a straight. It's like a very erect slash.
It's an erect slash.
Thank you, slash. Would you rather? Justin and Christian. My name is Bridget, writing to you from Chicago, Illinois. It's frigid here.
No.
No, I'm kidding.
Oh, sorry, my God. Sorry. I got so excited.
Sorry. No, sorry.
I can't believe I bought that. You also said it as you looked at me with a little mischievous look. You totally telegraphed that.
My name is Bridget, writing to you from Chicago, Illinois. My sister, Georgie, another cool name, Georgie.
I like girls Georgie. With guy names.
But you know, now...
Now that they're girls' names and guys' names.
It's all fluid. But I think of... When I think of Georgie... Used to be, but now... Because you haven't seen It.
I did.
You did?
Yeah.
You did? Uh-huh. Oh, you saw it?
I saw it.
With Georgie.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, scary.
How do you spell Georgie?
G-E-O-R-G-I.
Not E?
No. Huh. Wow, they have some...
Cool parents.
Some E-hating parents. my sister Georgie, or Georgie, and I listen to you guys every week, and I wanted to thank you for being a beacon of light in these strange and difficult times. That's so nice, Bridget. We're not making fun of her name, but we've been like...
talking about. I'm celebrating her name.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. Your conversation at the end of every podcast always makes us laugh and feel like it's okay to laugh. To quote Ralph Waldo Emerson, as one casually does, what is success? To laugh often and much, to win the respect of intelligent people and the affection of children, to earn the appreciation of honest critics, to appreciate the beauty, to find the best in others, to leave the world a bit better, whether by a healthy child, a garden patch, or a redeemed social condition, to know even one life has breathed easier because you have lived. This is to have succeeded. I'm going to cry. That is incredible. What an incredible quote. Holy shit. I'm going to read it again.
Okay.
What is success? To laugh often and much, to win the respect of intelligent people and the affection of children, to earn the appreciation of honest critics, to appreciate the beauty, to find the best in others, to leave the world a bit better, whether by a healthy child, a garden patch, or a redeemed social condition, to know even one life has breathed easier because you have lived. This is to have succeeded.
It's a great quote.
Wow. You've made us breathe easier. Oh, wow. Thank you. How beautiful. Would you rather, okay, now, would you rather, that's a tough pivot to make, but if anyone can make it, I think it's Bridget. Would you rather be on a sinking boat with Brody, Quint, and Hooper? Awesome question from Jaws. Wow. And have a great white approach. Oh, it's interesting. That kind of what we were talking about in the beginning of being so afraid of animals that you, that's one I would swim Aquaman. Would you rather be on a sinking boat with Brody, Quint, and Hooper from Jaws and have a great white approach, or an overturned Jeep with Tim and Lex Murphy, Joseph Mazzello and Ariana Richards from Jurassic Park, and a diner approach? I mean, a dinosaur.
In the distance, their stomachs are rumbling and they see a diner.
A Greek diner, no less.
My answer is very easy, but... See, I would much, much rather hang out with those three guys from Jaws.
Yeah.
Richard Dreyfuss, Roy Scheider, and Robert Shaw.
Robert Shaw.
I'd much rather hang out with those guys than the two kids from Jurassic Park. Nothing against the two kids from Jurassic Park, but that's not the question. It's the question is...
I'm glad that's the answer, by the way.
The question is shark.
Would you rather... With a shark or...
Because it doesn't matter who you're with at that point, right?
It's just like, how are you going to survive?
It's shark.
It has nothing to do with the company.
No.
But
if it was the company, I would pick the Jaws crew.
Even in terms of the animal, like, I would rather be with those guys, especially Quint, especially Robert Shaw, because he could, I mean... They could help us.
Right.
I mean, I don't think, no offense to young Joseph Mazzello and Ariana Richards, I don't think they're going to do that much to help us. As much as like...
That's true.
And Roy Scheider.
He was so cool.
He was so cool.
I had such a man crush on
me
him.
Me too.
I
was you don't both have man crushes on your kids. I got to do a reading with him shortly before he died. Yeah. Oh, wow. And he was just... He smelled a little bit of cigarettes, I remember. But
I thought you were going to say seawater.
No. No, he's he's not really a sheriff in a small
what?
In Amityville. No, he's an actor. No.
He is?
Yeah.
Weird.
Yeah, but he had this cool musk. Is my point.
He looks like he has a cool musk.
Yeah, doesn't he? And he was really kind and like I thought he was so cool. Anyway, great question.
But I would say, in general, I've so much more confidence in my running abilities than my swimming abilities. So. For that reason, I would choose the dinosaur because I
feel like
I can run away. And then the second main reason is chances are I'm going to die in either situation. And I would rather die seeing something like a dinosaur, something majestic. Sharks aren't majestic, but I'd rather have experienced a dinosaur.
I know what you're saying, but there is...
Have been extinct for how long?
I know, but there will be no part of you when... Talk about adrenaline kicking in. When, like, you're afraid for your life, there's not going to be... I don't think there'll be enough of you to even register that, like, oh, whoa, but at least it's a... I get to see this creature.
That may be, but if there's an afterlife and I'm looking back on my final moments...
You can, like, commiserate with...
not only commiserate, but I could have that experience in my... Toolbox of experiences.
Yeah, I guess so. You can like charm Amelia Earhart or something.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Definitely picked the dinosaur.
So you're assuming that you're going to die in either case.
I'm not assuming, but I think there's a very good chance.
See, I'm going to pick the shark because I think you have a better chance with those guys. And the ship is sinking. And I've seen Jaws, so I know that like some of the stuff floats and you can float on it. And you still have the gun. I mean, maybe I'm reading too literally into it. Because you have the gun. You have, and sharks, I don't think, are as bloodthirsty. Sharks aren't. Like great whites are. I mean, you can kick them in the eye and stuff. I mean, you... I always think about like...
You're also not maybe the most appetizing meal for a shark right now. You know, you're skinny.
Yeah.
You have like all that hair. I think a shark might be turned off by you right now.
Okay. Well, I'm not offended.
Whereas a dinosaur wouldn't, you know...
Care. But also think about this. You're on Jurassic Park. If you beat the shark, then you're kind of home free. I mean, you have to like get back to land. But in Jurassic Park, let's say you even manage to escape that
T-Rex. It doesn't say you're stuck in Jurassic Park for the rest of your life.
Joseph Mazzello and Ariana Richards from Jurassic Park.
I know, but it doesn't include...
Well, the actors the characters.
I know, but I think it's just surviving that situation. I don't think it means that for the rest of your life, you're in Jurassic Park.
You gotta
get
rescued. It just
says the rest of your life, you're not hanging out with these three guys on the ocean.
Yeah. I guess I would...
You read too far into it.
I guess I would take the... And that also, okay. But great questions.
Great questions.
Thanks, Bridget.
And thanks for writing in. That was so
Ralph Waldo Emerson.
Flattering and beautiful. Yeah.
Thanks to everyone. Listen, thanks especially to my guest, my friend, dear friend, Tom. And check out.
That quote really applies to him, I think.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know, there was a great episode of Ed, episode 16, I recall, where it was all about transcendentalists. We're learning, I'm a high school student, we learn about Thoreau in class, and I'm going to go back to the land and live as Thoreau does.
Live deliberately.
Live deliberately, yeah. That's similar to, I mean, Emerson was a transcendentalist too, right? Those guys really knew what was up.
Yeah, they did.
They were cool. But weirdly didn't like Irish people.
I'm not Irish.
No, I know, but I recently read, but they were...
Yeah, they had a real problem with Irish. Yeah. Not all of them.
No, Thoreau did. Thoreau. They were staunch abolitionists. I mean, they were like really into the rights of man and, you know, tolerance. And yet they're like, except for the Irish.
So weird.
I know. Well, the Irish were really castigated when they were first came here. Anyway, that's for another episode. That's for when we have, who's that MMA guy who... The guy who like struts around with
Conor McGregor. Yeah, I'll save that for the Conor McGregor episode.
Yeah, he's dying to be on the show.
What do you eat before a big fight?
Who's your favorite Muppet?
Thank you to all listening. And if you guys want to write in, our email address is lifeisshort@wondery.com. And thanks again to our wonderful guest, Tom Cavanaugh. And we will talk to you all next week.
Thank you.
Life could be a dream. Life could be a dream. Doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-shaboom.
Life is Short is hosted by me, Justin Long. It's co-hosted and produced by you,
Christian Long.
It's also produced by
Megan Monaco.
Senior producer is Michelle
Mish
Lands.
Audio engineer is
Sergio Enriquez.
Executive producers are
Withers Marshall Louis
and
Hernan Lopez.
For Wondery. Have a good week.
Bye.
He said the frustration was that, doesn't this guy look like me?
Yeah.
Do you think it was supposed to be?
Maybe, yeah.
It's pretty insulting to me. Don't you think? Please tell me I'm better looking than that guy. Please.
I mean, he's younger.
You're kidding, really? Am I better looking than that guy?
I'm the wrong person to ask.
Wow.
I can't judge your looks like that.
Jeez, do I think too much of my looks, or do you not think?
Do you think you're that handsome?
Than that guy, than those two guys, the monstrous looking guy?
I think he played a scary guy, but he has like nice features, and he has like a killer mask on, and like.
Do you think you're better looking than him?
Yeah.
Well, get out of here.
I did?
Yeah.
I mean, you did?
I did. You did. Samsung Galaxy Note 20.
Sorry.
Is that a new thing for you? That's what I do in my sleep.
Oh, what about that guy? It
feels good. I haven't seen
him. What about that guy?
You're more handsome.
What about that guy?
Not as handsome.
Really? Lindsey Graham?
Yeah.
You don't think I'm as handsome?
That's a really nice angle.
That was a great picture of Lindsey Graham, actually.
Yeah.
That was a great...
In general, I think you're more handsome than Lindsey. those.
Yeah, I mean, there I'm more. Yeah. And Benjamin Netanyahu.
Yeah, he's pretty handsome. Yeah.
What?
Bibi Netanyahu.
Oh. That's a good picture of him too, Lindsay. Yeah. He looks like Ryan Sexton.
Yeah.
That's a really good picture of him.
In this commercial,
wow, you're not who knew that Lindsey Graham had such different angles?
But in reality, I think you're better looking than him.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Life is Short ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus and Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Welcome to the small town of Chinook, where faith runs deep and secrets run deeper. In this new thriller, available exclusively on Wondery Plus, religion and crime collide when a gruesome murder rocks the isolated Montana community. Everyone is quick to point their fingers at a drug-addicted teenager, but local deputy Ruth Vogel isn't convinced. She suspects connections to a powerful religious group. Enter federal agent V.B. Loro, who has been investigating a local church for possible criminal activity. The pair form an unlikely partnership to catch the killer, unearthing secrets that leave Ruth torn between her duty to the law, her religious convictions, and her very own family. But something more sinister than murder is afoot, and someone is watching Ruth. With an all-star cast led by Emmy nominee Sanaa Lathan and Star Wars Kelly Marie Tran, Chinook is available exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.